accession number 18493, reel 14.
Mr. Arnold Lupton, reel 14.
Yes, you knew where to get back to, because apart from the screens lying around there was probably the mud oven that you'd built up for yourself, which you could recognize, different from the one which was built on the next tank site. There you were. You were back to being a lorry again.
I mean, you were disguising your tanks as lorries with these screens, but how about camouflage on the tanks themselves? Did you have to do the painting within the unit, or did they come ready painted?
They came with a... No, they only had a basic, a ground colour, let's say, on. You did whatever you wanted to decorate the tank with camouflage in the unit in position, according to how the CO or the brigadier in charge of the brigade wanted it to be done for his area.
So what was the basic colour that they arrived in?
Well, it was a sort of sandy colour. All he could say is it was just like this, but you can't say that on there. It was slightly greenish, not any specific colour, not any colour that I could put a name to anyway.
And what about the colours that you had to apply? I mean, did it change over time, the colours and the patterns?
No, the only colour we normally put on was black. And you didn't put too much of that on because it would have been noticeable against the sandy base colour. But it was enough to break up the view from any distance. More or less like a mirage in a way, and if you got hull down somewhere when you were having a shoot, well, you didn't show up against the skyline at all clearly because it was broken up with these patches of black. It's not a fully black, it was a would say a very dark grey.
Did you get a pattern to copy, or how did it work?
Well, over some time, you got a sort of general idea. Do it like this, so it comes out more or less like this. You didn't have a specific pattern to copy. You just had to do something which over the months or whatever, you gradually learned that was the sort of thing which went down best in that area. And when you were in action and hadn't got your tanks all washed and polished up and so on for inspection, the sand which was always blowing about anyway did eventually tone them down to, just patches on the sand, you hoped.
Do you remember a particular scheme that was around at about quite early on in the desert? There were sort of radiating bands of a bluey-grey and a dark grey from the front and then slightly widening towards the back. Was this something that you remember your tanks ever wearing?
No, I never remember having that. I think it was used on armored cars, it managed to break them up somehow to the view. They didn't look necessarily just like an armored car. They melded more into the background by having that type of camouflage on. I can't remember whether, I think the 11th Hussars had some of that armored cars done that way, from what I remember.
Moving on now, I mean, you've been through your first action, and the second one was a slightly bigger action, considerably bigger action.
Yeah.
Operation Crusader, is that correct? Is that the main?
I think that was the name of it. In November, in 1941.
November 41.
Hmm.
In what way, for you, was this second battle different from the first one?
Well, we had, to some extent, the superiority of position. Mainly, as far as we were concerned anyway, it was a question of trying to win over the Sidi Rezegh area, which had an airfield on it that they were using for mainly for fighters, and well, sometimes I think for the Stukas, for the dive bombers. But it was a big airfield, and when you were on that, you were on the top of a plateau, not a very high one, but enough so that you could see all the country round about. And this was on the way to Tobruk, which, again, was the main purpose was really to relieve that, and at the same time, if possible, to get rid of this aerodrome, as it was called in those early days. And the only trouble was that before, now let me see, it was about the 17th or 18th November, I think, I know it was before Cambrai Day anyway, because we were going to miss it this year. And we got all lagered up one evening. There was a lot of movement in the desert. You could hear even German tank columns moving not far away, and our own columns of tanks and vehicles. And in the distance, I remember seeing lots of flashes and thinking, oh, there's a bit of war going on up there. But actually, that was really the lightning, which was bringing a nice little storm to us. And we settled down to have our sleep. We were going to be up early in the morning. And woke up to absolute torrential rain in the middle of the night. And we had one area had some of these lorry camouflage things which people were sheltering under. Of course, it was useless because they were only made of sandbag stuff and hessian, and the rain just came straight through it as if there was nothing there. And during the night you gradually found that you needed to do what our fellow men in the area did when they were sitting down, which was to sort of squat down on their, almost on their heels. It had a very common name, like Morg Squat, but somebody said he was very glad that he'd learnt that, because the water was gradually rising all the time while he was squatting. Well, even next morning, some of the tanks were completely swallowed up in water. It had rained so much, and if they were in a hollow, the water had just collected there. But the most amazing thing was that all these dead plants, which you'd collected for firewood, were all in leaf and some even in flower. It was a most amazing sight. I've never seen anything like it, just overnight. Little melons growing somewhere that they'd been waiting years for water. I think it was about 7 years since the last rain there or something. And of course it made rather a mess of our movements around in the desert, because it wasn't exactly boggy, but it was very nasty surface. And it slowed down our movements, did slow down the Germans too, but the trouble was that they had still their tanks like Mark 3s and 4s, and we still had our cruisers and some people Crusaders and similar tanks with 2-pounders on. So they still really had the advantage, provided they could get in good positions to use it. Well, this was another case where we had a wonderful position up on the edge of the escarpment, looking down on Germans. And I don't know how many shots I fired on that occasion, at a range of about 200 yards or less, at their Mark 3s and 4s coming up the hill, and you could just see them bouncing off. And they, one of the Mark 3s with a 6-pounder on it, I think, fired just one shot, which blew our track off one side, and we weren't any use after that. We just backed away from the edge of the escarpment and had to leave the tank, because you just couldn't drive it with only one steering side and no track on the other side. And so we walked, just got out and walked away, and it was an amazing thing with the war going on all around. They're just walking as if you're out on Blackpool Front or something, until somebody came along in a tank and said, "Pop on here," and he moved us back out of the immediate front line, and then we were given a replacement tank, which had been in action, and unfortunately the crew, or part of the crew, killed, and so we had a bit of a battered tank, but it went, and we had that for a couple of days afterwards, doing the odd bit of a battle. But we were once again, unfortunately, on the losing side. I think we had almost equal quantities of armour, but not equal qualities. So eventually we what we were down to, just a very few tanks for the whole of the 8th Army, I think it was then, and for the whole of our division.
Did you, when you were when you lost your track, did you know where you had to go?
No, we just well, we went to, there were a few tanks milling around, I wouldn't say doing nothing, but they seemed to be looking for a decent place to go and position themselves, and we just walked away from where we knew the German tanks were, just below the edge of this plateau or escarpment, and until somebody said, "Oh, jump on this tank and I'll just take you back a bit." So he apparently knew which direction to go to take us, fortunately not up to the front. front edge again.
So where did you end up?
It'd be about a mile, yes, probably a mile further back, where the, I think the A echelon were there, and the fitters were able, as I say, to provide us with a replacement tank, and we were able to get armed up again and filled with petrol and so on to go and get moving again.
Did you go straight back in this replacement?
No, we were directed to go to another portion of the front, which was not under very heavy fire at that time, and we just joined in with a different troop there to carry on firing at the enemy tanks and so on. We had already blown up most of the planes anyway, which were on the airfield. We had managed to catch them. But they were a bit awkward because they were still filled with fuel and some of them were burning like mad, and the 25-pounder guns and so on were hidden behind them. They couldn't really see what they were firing at. But even then they were firing over open sights anyway, because the Germans were still coming on. They managed to get a lot of them that way.
When you abandoned your tank, did you have time to take your personal belongings?
No, only a knapsack. Not the full load of stuff which we had on each on the tank. All we had was the shaving and washing kit, that was all, I would think.
Yes, I visions of your small pack hanging on the outside of the tank that you described earlier. You've got time.
Yes,
to grab
well,
there.
No, that had to be left behind.
Did you do anything to disable the tank, or did you just leave it as it was?
We took the breech block out. We could do, and we did do. That went back to the fitters area so that if the tank was recovered later on, they could put that back in. Similarly with the machine gun on that tank. We couldn't disable the engine, there wasn't time to do that. We'd had the driving cog, whatever you call it, at the front of the tank where the track goes over and is driven, that had been hit by the shot. It not only blown the track apart, but it had smashed that off the tank, so it wasn't really any use unless it got back to a fitting place where they had any of that spare.
So clearly, with the driving sprocket gone, you weren't going to attempt to repair your track under fire. But did tracks get repaired under fire?
Yes, we did. Well, other people had it, I'm sure. I know we did once, a little earlier, during a skirmish with some Germans, and it wasn't a case of the track being broken by fire, at least it didn't appear to be. It was just a pin broke, and there was the track sort of laid out on the ground, and we had no... Well, a little bit of steering capacity, but not a great amount. And certainly no driving capacity, because you couldn't drive all the time on one track. And so we had to get out and see what we could do with this thing, and managed to get it all stretched out in front of the tank. And whilst we were doing this, there were shots pinging across, sort of between somebody at the end of the track and the tank and so on. It was amazing. It didn't really bother you. Sort of carried on trying to get the track back on the tank. Fortunately, nobody was hit, and no damage was done, and we did get the track back on to the tank. But it's afterwards, it's not a very pleasant reminiscence, you know, to think you could have gone on that occasion just because the track had broken and you were stuck in the middle of the desert.
So how long a job was this?
I should think to do the whole job, we probably got that one done in about 20 minutes at the most, I should think.
I doubt the surroundings were concentrating your minds.
Yes, yes. He did it as quickly as possible, not strictly according to the instructions you'd had, but the best you could do under the circumstances. When you had got the track back to the tank, of course, you had the body of the tank to protect you then from any... They were mainly small arms fire that was coming across us. It was quite an unwelcome experience, really. And I don't know whether it was, I think it was on that occasion when I was getting back up to the tank turret to get in it, and I thought, that's curious. And when I got in the tank, I hadn't got a heel on my boot. It must have been hit by one of these shots. Just took the heel off level, and but I was perfectly all right. So that was another one of my occasions of luck.
Going back to the major operation, Crusader, you described some of the general outline, but how did you, what was your feeling about this battle? Was it, did you feel any in any way different to your to the first major one, as in Battle Axe?
No, really. We went into it in the same spirit. We felt mainly it was frustration that you could sit there and ping away at these things and they were just bouncing off them and doing nothing. It's a pity I didn't lower my sights and perhaps bang his track before he got mine, or ours. That might have stopped them a bit and made them think. But it was, as I say, mainly frustration that we were there, a big force, and we couldn't really do anything to stop them doing what they were doing. We did eventually knock out a vast number of their tanks. I mean, our army, knocked out a vast number of their tanks, almost as many, probably, as they knocked out of ours. But they were nearer to their supply center than we were at that time, and they probably had more, what would they say? They were probably feeling more confident, anyway, than we were, and we had a vast army scattered around the desert, South Africans, New Zealanders, Australians, British, Indians. Was a tremendous army. But we just couldn't do on that occasion what we should do. And so I say it was frustration mainly.
Were you aware, I mean, you individually and your friends within your troop and your tank, your squadron, were you aware of the size of the force that you were part of at that time, or is this something that you learned about later?
No, we'd seen vast numbers of, well, Bren gun carriers and lorries and marching troops. We'd seen considerable numbers of tanks in addition to ours also, and armoured cars, of course. We knew there was quite a vast force there. We didn't know how big it was. We didn't know how big the Germans' army was. But on both sides, there was a tremendous number of people around, and quite a bit of air activity too. So we knew that it was something much bigger than what we'd been in before. It was only later that we really learnt how big.
Talking of air activity, was the Luftwaffe a particular problem to you?
They never gave us much trouble, no. And the only occasion when I... we had just the odd one came over occasionally, and or odd one or two, did a bit of machine gunning and that kind of thing. Once when one came over and bombed our fitters area where one of our tanks was being done up again, and but normally we didn't see much of them at all. And of course if we heard any aircraft around in the sky, if we were parked up, then you didn't walk around making yourself visible as far as possible to them up there. They may have seen these imitation lorries down below or whatever and thought they were just lorries and not bothered, but normally they didn't come over at all, or they didn't come down to attack us.
Thinking of the of aircraft, and makes you think of defensive measures. Was it standard procedure that when you came to a stop, that you were in lager, did you as a standard thing dig slit trenches?
No, we never dug slit trenches. You hoped your tank would sort of protect you if anything came down towards you, and you did make sure that you also had your Bren gun in position on the tank, so that if anybody did come, you could try firing a shot or two at them. But no, we never dug slit trenches. I wouldn't have liked to have tried myself in that soil, or so-called, either.
Another thing sometimes, I think maybe it might have been in other conditions, but one hears of digging a scrape and then driving the tank over it or partially over it. Was that something that you ever did?
No, I never recall... no, nothing like that. No, we didn't.
So, on Crusader, you were saying that the principal feeling was frustration at appearing not to make any great effect on the German tanks. But how about you personally? Did you feel more confident in this battle than your first one? Were you enjoying wrong word? I mean, did the first lot of experience alter your view of what you were doing?
No. I think if anything, we on our tank, probably on all the other tanks, were feeling more confident of being able to handle whatever the situation was. And really, until we did have our track knocked off, we felt more confident, apart from, as I say, myself and probably the tank commander, to see all our shots bouncing off these things in front of us. Otherwise, we were feeling really more confident. And I was very confident with this driver we had. He was the one I had for a very long time afterwards, too. And it was a very good crew we had then. And as I say, everybody.